You know football, and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single-game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code CHARLIE, ZULU, ALPHA, BRAVO, ECHO to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie. This is the ZabeCast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. Monday, October 6, 2025. Thank you for downloading you and I tonight for what is going to be a woefully incomplete ZabeCast, where there is so much stuff out there, I can't possibly get to it all. I have written down all the pertinent scores from the weekend on one single note card. I listed all the top 25 college football scores, all the NFL scores, all the series in baseball, and I just want to have them visually. I feel much better. This, can you hear this? There you go. I'm whapping the microphone with my little note card here. I just love to be able to visually see things to get a sense for it, because we are in the absolute salad days, the greatest month of the year, question mark, when it comes to watching sports. I would argue that there is not a question mark to it, that October, with both the frothing culmination of the baseball season, along with college football, NFL, and then a little bit of NBA and NHL sprinkled in on top, it's the most overstuffed month, and it's better than May. May is really good. Don't get me wrong. We're at the peak of the NBA and NHL playoffs, but they're not handing out any trophies in the month of May. Of course, they're probably not going to hand out the World Series trophy either in October, so maybe this will be a trophy-less month, but either way. Oh, wait, the WNBA? Oh, that's right. They're going to hand out their trophy and then probably go on a lockdown or a lockout and a shutdown that lasts for who knows how long. And I'm sure there'll be six people that are upset about it and lots of people tweeting about it, but I don't care. So October is amazing. There's so much going on, and it would be enough if it was only the stuff going on the field, but it's not. It's more than that, and that's where we start. I've got 10 cuts for you today, including counterfeit Bill. He's just not that good. Bad Bunny doubles down. Red Zone Blues. It happened again. A great week of practice. The eye in the sky. Too depressed to podcast. And chugging the magic brew. Those are all on today's ZabeCast, but we start with cut one. Call an ambulance, but not for me. For all of you meme lords out there, you know this one. I don't know when it came to prominence as a meme. It was posted on YouTube in 2018. So let's call it about 2018. This was a big one back in the day.
Hey, old man, give me everything.
Call an ambulance, but not for me.
So that video was from some, I want to say, gun ownership and gun training company, self-defense company, and it portrayed this young guy with a knife approaching an old man right as he's about to get into his car, pulling the knife and then saying, give me all you got. And then the old man fakes being hurt and pulls out a gun. Call an ambulance, just not for me. This was a meme, people, okay? Just a meme.
Hey, old man, give me everything.
Call an ambulance, but not for me.
Who would have thought that that meme would have applied so directly to this Mark Sanchez stabbing in Indianapolis? Unbelievable story. One of the most crazy plot twists I've seen in a story in a long time. Now, a lot of the plot twist has to do with the fact that we just assumed what must have been the basic shape of the narrative, because we all assumed that Mark Sanchez was a good guy. What a great guy, say some in the media who worked with the former USC quarterback, the former Jets quarterback, the former Eagles quarterback, the former, he got passed around a lot, didn't he? And now on Fox as one of their lead color analysts, everyone just assumed he was a great guy. So the notion that he was stabbed in Indianapolis at 12:30 at night and that he was in critical but then stable condition, the narrative was that it couldn't be his fault. He must have been the victim of some robbery or who knows what, a random act of violence. And then we find out more to the story. By the time Saturday afternoon had unfolded, was it Saturday afternoon or Sunday? It was Saturday afternoon we learned about this. It was like Mark Sanchez stabbed overnight, Indianapolis, in the hospital. And everyone starts tweeting out their takes. More on that in a second. And then later on by that afternoon, it's like, oh, and he's also been arrested. Wait, what? Okay, well, surely they must have arrested the other guy that got into a fight with him that ended up with Mark Sanchez being stabbed and going to the No. No, they did not arrest the other guy. Now we know the full shape of the story, and it is mind-boggling. But let's talk about those who have the most egg on their face. Let's start with Adam Shifty Schefter. Adam Schefter is one of the most wildly overpaid entities in all of sports media. I think he's making 10, maybe more, million dollars a year to break stories on the NFL for the Four Letter Network. He is also used, sprinkled in here, sprinkled in there, on TV shows, on their radio platforms, on their pregame shows, postgame, halftime, anywhere you need a little bit of Adam Schefter authority, because this guy's wired in. He once bragged about how he sleeps with two cell phones on his pillow near his ears in case he has to wake up and get a hot tip on something that's going on. He's a shitty actual reporter. The good actual reporters on ESPN and working for the Mouse are guys like Don Van Atta and company. They're the ones that dig in and actually get good actual journalism and reporting out to the public. But it takes time and it takes effort, and they're careful about what they say. Adam Schefter is not careful. Adam Schefter is just a way overpaid. Oh my God, I got to chime in on this. Adam Schefter is the only one who tweeted, former NFL quarterback and current Fox Sports broadcaster Mark Sanchez has been hospitalized after being stabbed during a robbery in Indianapolis early Saturday morning. And the tweet stayed up for quite some time. Many people saying, hey, are you going to take this down? Hey, are you going to issue an apology? Hey, are you going to explain why Adam Schefter, $10 million a year, was the only guy that reported that it was a robbery. Only reporter. What, did he just get a wild tip from somebody and he ran with it? I don't believe as of this hour, Sunday night, he has explained. What I was led to believe from my sources was that this was a robbery gone bad. Obviously, I should have double-checked. I don't think he's even explained it. I don't know if he will explain it. In a proper world, they would suspend Adam Schefter for this kind of erroneous report. A one-off. He was the only guy that said this, and he couldn't have been more wrong. There was no need to be this quick to then be this wrong. But then again, in a perfect world, they wouldn't pay a guy $10 million to cover a league that ESPN is already neck deep into when it comes to conflicts of interest. But that's not all. Dan Dockage tweeted, Sanchez or anyone being stabbed downtown in Indy should not be a surprise. We have a ton of fatherless and armed African-American kids descending on downtown every weekend in Indy. If that offends you, F off, as the chief of police, Bailey, and Reverend Harrison have told you this. Well, it turns out that it was not a young, armed, fatherless African-American kid. It was Sanchez himself who was doing the stabby stabby. Now, Dockage has not backed down from this, And he has said, look, I stand by my tweet because I said Sanchez or anyone else being stabbed. And he didn't say that for like the association of the way Dokic presented it should have merited at least a, hey, you know what? I jumped to a bit of a conclusion here. But he didn't, because this is what Dokic is now. That said, I punched into Dan's Twitter feed, and it turns out that, holy shit, the crime in downtown Indy is really bad. The murder rate is second only to Chicago. And on the night after the Sanchez incident, they had two people stabbed and I think three people killed downtown Indianapolis. Doesn't make Dokic right, but he jumped to a conclusion on, oh, I bet it was this. Then there was Ed Werder. Ed Werder tweeted, this is awful, hoping that Mark recovers fully and quickly. Got to know him when he came to the Cowboys to back up Tony Romo. Just a phenomenal human being. The person responsible, said Werder, needs to be arrested and fully prosecuted. Yes, they have done that. That man is good old Mark Sanchez. The charges that Sanchez are facing are not that severe, although I've seen photos of the truck driver that was injured in this, and they are horrible. Of the old man who was beaten up. I guess I should get to the actual facts of this. I assume by now you've heard. Mark Sanchez went crazy on a guy in a food service truck, not even a DoorDash driver. That was my assumption after I heard that he had gotten into an altercation with a food delivery person when he said you can't park there. And that's where it came from. No. There was a guy in a box truck working for an industrial commercial food servicing company that had backed up to the docks near the downtown, I think, Marriott Hotel at 12:30 at night and was proceeding to then clean the grease out of the grease fryers in the restaurant. Major restaurants have these trucks that do this. They suck the grease all the way out through tubes deep into the restaurant itself out to a truck that processes it. I know it's crazy when I first learned of this, but it's easier and less messy to try to do it that way than it is to actually, you know, pull the grease tubs out and then dump them here and carry them out. No. So that's what this guy was doing at 12:30 at night. And Sanchez, slurring his words, smelling of alcohol, according to police reports, went crazy on this old man. Probably a 60-year-old man, it looks like, by his gray hair and his overall photos in the hospital with a huge gash on his face. The old man was just trying to do his job, and Sanchez, hammered drunk, probably tripping balls on some kind of drugs, went after the guy and said, "You can't park here." And because Sanchez, I guess, was looking pretty well dressed up after a night on the town, he thought that he was speaking on behalf of the hotel. And so the man gets out of his truck, talks to Sanchez. Sanchez claims the hotel manager told him that he can't park there. What kind of drugs was Mark Sanchez on? He then proceeds to chase the man around the truck, climb into the cab, get into a fight with the man, throw him against the wall, throw him onto the ground. The man was so terrified, the truck driver, that he used mace, and that was not effective. And then he finally pulled out a knife to stop Sanchez from the attack. That's where Sanchez got stabbed. He then ran down the street. Police were called. He was quickly apprehended, taken to the hospital with some serious wounds. And also the man that was just trying to do his job as the grease sucker outer guy went to the hospital as well, and he's pretty well fucked up. At some point, I imagine he is going to tell his story, or better yet, just keep his story in his back pocket and have his lawyers call Mark Sanchez, who's about to be fired, by the way. I'm kind of surprised that Fox hasn't done so already. They probably don't want to jump to conclusions themselves, but either way, Mark Sanchez is not the nice guy everyone assumed he was. Well, it could have just been one bad night, Zabe. You never been hammered? Yeah, I've been hammered. Haven't attacked a guy who's trying to do his job. Well, have you ever had a bad trip on goofballs, acid, gummies, you name it? No, I haven't. That doesn't excuse anything. You're responsible for yourself and your own actions. So fuck Mark Sanchez, not a good guy. And why did everyone think that, oh, he must have been the victim? Because of attractiveness privilege. It's a real thing that good-looking people, especially good-looking women, but good-looking men and women, if you have that, the good looks to you and the charm, boy, you can get away with a lot of shit. People just assume the best about you. What a nice guy. Or he was a nice guy when I met him. He was a nice guy to me. We don't know what people are at the end of the day. And I would like to think that, well, this is an isolated, weird, random incident that was prompted by some kind of crazy drugs that made him go crazy. But maybe there's more to Mark Sanchez not being a great guy. Either way, wow. To be stabbed in critical condition in the hospital and then handcuffed to the bed because you've been arrested. What a twist. And then soon to be fired, I'm sure. If not put on leave for the rest of the year. And then a quiet dismissal sometime in January or February of, Fox and Mark Sanchez have quietly parted ways. But wow, what a story. Cut to counterfeit Bill. Bill Belichick has burned his reputation to the ground. The North Carolina Tar Heels, after a bye week in which he was seen flitting off somewhere nice and romantic with his child girlfriend, Jordan Hudson, they came back off of their bye and promptly got boat raced by a Clemson team that was already drowning and desperate for anything they could cling to. Luckily, Clemson drew North Carolina. It's so bad now for Belichick at North Carolina. The question is, how long can they suffer through it? Will he make it to the end of the year? What a terrible hire. Dan Wolkin for Yahoo Sports has this paragraph. If anyone at North Carolina deserves to be fired, it's whoever allowed one of the great brands in college athletics to become a multi-million dollar jobs program for the friends and family of a 73-year-old who didn't understand what it takes to win in college football. Normally, that would be the fault of the AD. But everyone in college athletics knows that North Carolina AD Bubba Cunningham had nothing to do with hiring Bill Belichick. Yeah, that's the way I seem to recall the reporting on this, that they went over Bubba's head and said, no, we got to take our chance. We got to. I mean, when are you ever going to have a former six-time Super Bowl winning coach ready and available for you in college? This guy could really. Yeah, how's it working out? Bubba didn't want this. It was the misguided boosters, the egotistical politicians, Chancellor Lee Roberts, who all started to get a tingle, feel a tingle up their leg, writes Wolkin, when a six-time Super Bowl winner showed interest in coaching the Tar Heels, but instead of going to the doctor to get that taken care of, they actually hired him, and his girlfriend, and his two sons, and his bestie Mike Lombardi, who is directly responsible for assembling one of the worst power conference rosters in history, writes Wolkin. In fact, after the 38-10 loss to Clemson, he says it's so bad that Merriam-Webster should honor it by changing the word nepotism to Belichism. Oh. Dagger. Cut three. He's just not that good. Arch Manning and the Texas Longhorns lost to one-win Florida, who was also spiraling at the time they met them. The ninth-ranked team in the country at the time, Texas, has now fallen out of the top 25 altogether, along with Penn State. By the way, Penn State, Texas were 1-2 in the AP poll to start the season. Both are out of the top 25 entirely without a single win between them against a P4 opponent by October 5th. That is stunning. Many pundits, including the great Colin Cowherd, had Penn State, Texas as his college football championship. Texas falls to Florida 29-21, and Arch Manning was once again meh minus at best, including two interceptions in the loss at Florida. The whole notion that he has to be good because look at the hype and look at the high school yardage and look at the pedigree of Arch Manning is going to be one of the greatest stress tests, I think, for media expectations, modern media hype we've ever seen. And I think it's also going to be a real challenge for Texas and Sark, because what do? You know that Arch is only a redshirt sophomore. What do? Run him off? He's also making, I don't know how many million in NIL money, but that's another thing that's crazy. He sucks for his level of play, Division I football, and he's being paid millions of dollars to suck based on what? Hype and hype alone. Cut four, Bad Bunny doubles down. Saturday Night Live, musical guest. That's right, Bad Bunny, your halftime musical act at the upcoming Super Bowl in Santa Clara. And in his little set, he said to those who are not real fans of his or not fans of him playing the halftime show that, don't worry if my songs are not in English. You've got 4 months to learn some Spanish. Oh, that is rich. Of course, that has agitated quite a few people. I actually have a couple of friends, good friends, who have said, that's it. We're done. We're not watching the NFL. We can't anymore. Can't in good conscience. Won't do it. Won't support them. Claim to have boycotted the games on Sunday. Now, when I say claim, I can't verify if they watched any NFL. But they didn't miss anything in the 1 o'clock slate. The 1 o'clock slate of games is one of the most gobsmackingly awful slate of games. Huge blowouts left and right. More on that in just a second. But some of us on the text there are like, oh, I said, hey, you guys going to take this to Facebook? Get a stir going over there? Get the boat rocking back and forth. Let's take it to Facebook. Come on now. They're like, no, I'm not going to do that. And I'm like, why? Don't you want more people to come together and bring the NFL to its knees? I get it. It's a provocative, intentional choice for a halftime act. It is a cross-dressing anarchist, communist, all the ists. Well, I don't know what he is. He has cross-dressed in the past. And he does hate Donald Trump. And he said he wouldn't perform in the U.S. because of what Immigration's Customs Enforcement is doing, ICE. Although Kristi Noem did say that ICE would be all over the area in Santa Clara when Bad Bunny was doing his halftime show. Whatever. But yeah, it's a provocative choice. And that's what, you know, basically it comes down to Jay-Z's Roc Nation, which chooses the artist, because the NFL was panicked in the wake of George Floyd. Oh my God, what are we going to do? We have to blackwash ourselves. We have to show that we trust a black partner. Jay-Z, take the halftime show. And we're 0-7 since Roc Nation and Jay-Z took over for any white artists, but you know, maybe we'll get to some diversity of good old white artists at some point, but we're not there yet. So you got Jay-Z and you've got the host committee, which is the Bay Area, San Francisco, Santa Clara, the absolute beating heart of radical leftism. And so, and the, you know, Gavin Newsom's hometown. You tell me that you didn't think this was going to happen. The hometown committee collaborates with Roc Nation on who should we have. That's the collaboration. This was the obvious collaboration, but the NFL did have to sign off on it. The NFL could have said, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to piss off our fans. The NFL does not care. The NFL is just steamrolling its way to as much money as it can hoover up right now. And I'd love to be able to sit here and say, okay, just wait, the tide will turn. I'd love to say that, you know, Mark Cuban once said this, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. The NFL is being a hog. I just don't see it. I wish I was wrong, but I don't see it. Cut five, the Red Zone Blues. I normally don't watch the Red Zone, and I'm not trying to humble flex you on this one. It's not my thing per se. A lot of people do. They love it. Oh, can't wait for the red zone. Going to sit down, plop on the couch, turn on Scott Hansen and the red zone. So they take you to all the games. It's everything soup when it comes to the NFL. I didn't like it when I was watching the Andrew Siciliano version by way of DirecTV. Remember, there was an overlap. It started with Andrew and DirecTV, Red Zone, and then NFL, I think the NFL Network or the cable version of it cropped up, and they hired Scott Hansen. Apparently a nice guy. He was in D.C. for a short little bit. I intersected with him briefly one time in studio at Comcast Sportsnet. Didn't really talk to him, though. But by all accounts, a nice guy. And they had two red zones at one point, like the two teams named Rough Riders in the CFL at one point. There's now only one, and don't ask me which city it's from because I've already forgotten. Anyway, so Andrew, who I admit I'm biased because I do know him well, and I do consider him a friend, and we did work together at Fox Sports Radio, and he was in D.C. in his radio career before getting on TV with NFL Network and, of course, Red Zone. The Andrew Siciliano Red Zone was so much better because after watching today, that would be a Sunday with the Packers on a bye and the Commanders not playing until the late window, what else was it going to do? And I was actually driving back from playing golf, and I popped on the Red Zone on my phone just to kind of listen and glance safely as I had the cruise control going and the Rustero Kia Sorento barreling safely at speed limits only slightly above the posted number on good old I-43 in southeast Wisconsin. I'm listening and I'm watching and I'm like, man, Siciliano was a master at this, whereas Hansen, he just lets somebody grab the clicker, grab the remote, and just boop, we're over at this game. Boop, we're over at that game now. Wait, what? Siciliano, for every transition, as I recall it, would narrate something on the way out of the game and on the way to the next game. And he would sometimes fill you in by saying, and we're going to go back here in a second because there's a critical fourth down coming up and the Chargers have called timeout to talk about it. Even if it's not on your screen, that's what Siciliano would do. Andrew has such a sharp mind and he's got lots of radio muscles built up. I always say that radio guys, when they get a chance to do TV, show a certain radio strength, a nimbleness, a quickness, a way of communicating that a lot of TV guys don't have. But Siciliano was great because every time they would go out of a game, he would pretty much say, okay, it looks like it's going to be first and 10 inside the 30 for the Giants. We're going to take you right now to Cincinnati where a pass interference call has been thrown, a flag has been thrown on the field. Let's pick it up here. And he would send it over there. And he would include the names of the key players and he would add a little snarky commentary at times, which was great. None of that on the Scott Hansen Red Zone. I don't know what their philosophy is. I don't know what you guys think who once watched the other product, but this product's not nearly as good because you really need to set things up. And I feel like on the new Red Zone, they punch away from games that are coming to a critical boil when they should stay with that game, even if it means, oh my God, there's another touchdown about to be scored in a game that is a 30-point blowout somewhere else. I don't think that matters. I think the Red Zone shouldn't be about, we're just going to show you every touchdown or every scoring play, no matter what, right when it happens. It should be, here's what is the most critical thing. For example, there was a grounding, intentional grounding call in the Philly game against the Broncos. Huge win by the Broncos, by the way, to come back from 17-3 down in the fourth quarter. Just kept plugging away. And we are at 18-17. Also, one note on that Bronco game. So the Broncos are down 14, fourth quarter. They score a touchdown. What is the trendy analytics strategy to employ? Go for two right away. Go for two right away because if you get the two right away, down 14, now you're only down six, and you put a lot of pressure on the other team. Pressure to perform, pressure to throw, pressure to, oh shit, a touchdown now beats us if we go three and out. And that's a strong position. And if you miss the two-point conversion, down 14, scoring a touchdown. Now you're down 8. You can still make it up on your next two-point conversion if you're lucky enough to get the ball back and score a touchdown. And so, therefore, you're still not dead yet. That's the so-called new way analytics of fourth quarter, down 14, go for two first, and then you have a chance to make it up. Peyton did the opposite. He kicked a field goal to make it 7, and then when they scored again to make it 17-16, he went for two. And I'm like, wow, I literally don't think I've ever seen any coach do it this way. Needless to say, they converted. Maybe Sean Payton knew they had a play that could not be stopped on a two-pointer, and Bo Nix and Cortland Sutton executed it perfectly, but whatever. So anyway, it's coming down to it, fourth quarter, and the Broncos still have to make a first down, and it looks like Bo Nix has committed an absolutely obvious intentional grounding as he jumped up, spun around, almost got sacked, got grabbed, and then just yeet, threw the ball feebly about 10 feet in front of him, sort of in the direction of a eligible receiver for the Broncos. Here's how it sounded, and then I want you to listen to what Tony Romo says about how shitty the referee mechanics were in dealing with this.
A young quarterback, but maybe that changes, and maybe it doesn't.
In trouble. Oh, my goodness. He got it away. There is a receiver, Troutman, in the area.
Yes, I agree.
That was dangerous.
Very.
That was Hunt who was in on him.
Outstanding job by Hunt. You could argue finishing the drive. Watch Hunt right here up top.
And now they're throwing the flag, Tony.
He reads it, goes in there, doesn't fall for the fake. That's close. I could see either way. Honestly, I might side with Philly.
Grounding offense, number 10. All they take is a solid foul. We've lost it down and third down.
Right, wasn't Troutman in the area or not? Gene Steratore, what did you see there?
I've seen them pick up flags for intentional grounding with receivers working themselves back. I think it's in the vicinity, Jim. I know he's 10 yards away. Troutman's working himself back. I've seen those plays not be called intentional grounding in the past.
I agree with Gene on everything he said. I'm just saying, I think in that specific case, I would have probably called intentional grounding.
Denver right now is on the field. They're applauding something. They might have a replay assist here coming.
Well, if someone's in the area, that's why I think Gene is correct. It just looks like he's trying to get rid of the ball and do it.
So it is an incompletion. They changed the call. It's still a 3rd and 6.
Just don't tell us?
Yeah, they didn't. Never mentioned it.
Not that big a deal. Just a huge deal.
I mean, incredible. Incredible. How did that whole thing unfold? How did the referees not take a moment to say, oh, that penalty we just announced? Never mind. And here's why. Crew Chief Sean Smith, I would assume that he is going to get downgraded for this by the league, although I don't know. You heard about Nance talking in Steratore about maybe there was a replay assist in this. Remember, replay now can stick its finger in and go, no, 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 no. And everyone's wired up. And the crew chief's got an earpiece in. I believe some of the other referees have earpieces in. It's such bullshit. This is no way to have sporting events. And you shouldn't try to define intentional grounding. It's like pornography. You'll know it when you see it. It was clearly just Bo Nix yeeting the ball in the grasp to avoid a sack. Call the flag, announce the penalty, keep removing. Instead, they undid it at a critical point, by the way. We're talking a one-point game with how much time is left here? 3rd and 6. 3:20 left in the game. Unacceptable. And there was a Zach Bond roughing penalty as he came in just a beat late of a Broncos player stretching and fighting and struggling to gain a first down on a critical third down play. Bond came in, their outstanding all-pro linebacker, and hit him. Didn't spear him. Hit him just to make sure he had stopped trying to stretch and move, and a 15-yard penalty, new set of downs. Outrageous. Eagles also probably should have gotten a PI call that would have given them one shot at the end zone for the win. Or actually a field goal, I should say, because they threw the ball down about to the 12-yard line. It looked like their receiver got a classic underthrow ball where he turned around, the DB didn't, grabbed him by the arm, no call. I mean, these are the kind of things. Oh, and there was a roughing the passer on Jackson Dart in the Saints game that will make you say, wait, what? That cannot be a penalty, but it was. A sack on Jackson Dart, blindside sack in which the defender for the Saints actually led up. Once he had hit Jackson Dart at full force from the blindside where he didn't see it coming, he let go of his arms and most certainly did not drive the quarterback into the ground, which you once were able to do, and they still called a penalty. No helmet to helmet, no spearing, no leading with the crown, no wrapping up, no pile driving to the ground, just, oh, well, that looked mean. We're going to throw a flag. It's outrageous. This is the kind of shit that would make me say, you know what? It's a nice, sunny, bonus summer day in early October. I'd rather be outside than watching this. Besides, I know there's a game tonight once the sun goes down. Bills and Patriots going on right now. There's a game tomorrow night in which I can watch. I'm going to take advantage of the nice weather while we got it. I would be more inclined to give up the NFL based on this bullshit than Bad Bunny. Cut six. It happened again. You've got to be kidding me on these goal line football drops by idiots that are showing how cool they are. Oh, look at me. I'm about to score a touchdown. I'm going to drop the ball right as I go into the end zone. The latest coming from the Arizona Cardinals and running back Amari DeMarcado. Would have been a 72-yard run to make it, I think, 30-3 as the Cardinals were rolling the hapless Titans. In the early fourth quarter, instead, he dropped it at the one-inch line, maybe, and it turned into a touchback. And from there, all mayhem ensued. The Cardinals ended up losing this game in the most gobsmackingly, what are you doing, throw the game away fashion you've ever seen. They had an interception as the Titans were driving for a potential touchdown, interception at their own 10, where the dumb defensive player gets up, stumbles, falls to the ground without being hit, then fumbles the ball while falling to the ground while not being hit, then kicked into the end zone, recovered by the Titans for a touchdown. It's incredible to watch this stuff. But back to DeMarcado. People ask, how is this still happening? How is it still happening, the running back or the wide receiver dropping the ball at the one-yard line going in for an easy touchdown? Why? How come this has not been snuffed out as a practice at all levels of football by coaches just saying, oh, you can't do this. Don't be a moron. Get into the end zone, hold on to the ball, give it to the referee. Never drop the ball in the end zone, no matter where you are. Run through the end zone if you have to before dropping the ball. Why? How? This should have ended after Leon Lett in the Super Bowl in 93 got popped from behind by Don Beebe as he was showboating, holding the ball out to his side. That's where this should have ended. But instead, it continues, and Amari DeMarcado is the latest. I know why. When people say, well, how is this still happening? Why? It's because it is cool to do that. It's a risky, cool maneuver. It's like doing donuts at a street takeover. These Utes want to be on the edge. Like, look at us, man. I know this is dangerous, but it's cool. It's irresponsible behavior that is celebrated, and that's why it still happens. And this comes 1 week after A.D. Mitchell of the Colts did something not quite as bad. He didn't drop it per se, but he was moving the ball from one hand to the other to then sort of showboat going into the end zone, and that's where he fumbled. This was a brutal drop by Amari DeMarcado, and it keeps happening because of the culture. It's not fundamental football. It's cool to do that. Yeah, man, I just broke the plane. I'm not holding this ball for one more second than I have to. Whoops. So I went to Gronk 3. which, by the way, I'm not sponsored. Somebody emailed me saying, what, are you sponsored by them? Keep bringing up old Gronk 3. I'm just showing my sources. I went to Grok, my AI portal of choice, and I typed in the following prompt. Show me a list of football players, college and pro, who have dropped the football at the one-yard line going in for a touchdown, negating the TD and resulting in a touchback. 34 seconds later, I have the following list, and it's really good. In the NFL, here's your list of shame. Leon Lett, Super Bowl 1993. Danny Trevathan, Broncos. September 5th, 2013, 30-yard pick six against the Ravens. Whoops. Malachi Corley, New York Jets, October 31st of last year against the Texans. 19-yard line sprint to the end zone, dropped the ball at the one to celebrate. Jonathan Taylor did it later on that year. There was two last year of this case, and Taylor would be the last kind of guy you would think that would do this because he seems to be a pretty solid, you know, sensible pros pro, not a showboater. Adonai Mitchell or A.D. Mitchell last week is on the list for the pros, and now Imari DiMarcado on the droppedatatheone.com list of shame. The college list, Kalen Clay for the Utah Utes against the Oregon Ducks, 2014, November 8, 79-yard punt return. Oh, I remember that play. Ray-Ray McLeod for the Clemson Tigers against Louisville in October of 2016. 75-yard punt return. Showboating dropped it at the one. Braden Marshall of UCF against Iowa State in 2016. A would-be pick six dropped at the one. Dorian Whittington for the Utes against Oregon. September of last year. Let go of the ball before crossing. And then Turbo Richard this year for Boston College against Michigan State. Richard broke free in a long run but fumbled at the one-yard line. Michigan State recovered in the end zone, ruled a touchback. It keeps happening because the culture says be cool. Don't be fundamental. Being solid, fundamental, that's for nerds. Show your flair, man. Get in the end zone, drop the ball right away. Yeah, that's how you do it. You know, one of the things I love most about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast. In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. If you are overwhelmed by the hiring process or you've been struggling to get your job post seen, listen up. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. Your post jumps right to the top of the page for relevant candidates, so you reach exactly who you want faster. And it makes a huge difference, according to Indeed data. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this podcast will get $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the podcast by saying you heard about it right here on this pod. Indeed.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring Indeed is all you need.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states, thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know football, and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. Cut 7. It was a great week of practice. Poor Aaron Glenn. Or maybe not poor Aaron Glenn. I got nothing against him. Jet fans hate him. Jets are now 0-5 after getting mollywopped by the Cowboys. They're 0-5 with no turnovers forced on defense. Aaron Glenn said we had a great week of practice on Friday. And somebody tweeted out, the Jets are now lifetime 0-1037 when their coach says we had a great week of practice. The Jets couldn't do anything against the Cowboys' horrific defense. And they were no match against Dak Prescott, who once again balled out. Some people are saying Dak Prescott for MVP. Okay. Some people are saying he should be the MVP. Nobody's saying that. Only you, television guy, is saying that about Dak Prescott. But great week of practice. Don't ever say that. It's just setting yourself up to look stupid. The Jets were going to be a bad team. For every Jet fan saying this Jets team's awful this year, I don't dispute it. But that said, you knew you were going to be bad, right? It's like Justin Fields is not the answer. You know that, right? Surely? You gotta? Cut 8, the eye in the sky. They say it never lies, but sometimes the eye in the sky interferes with play. There was two Spider Cam incidents this weekend. One was in that Jets-Cowboys game in which a deflected pass ricocheted high in the air and back over the quarterback's head. I think it was Dak Prescott, and hit the Spider Cam. And they interpreted the rule incorrectly. They just called it an incomplete pass. In fact, it should have been a do-over of the entire down. And I guess neither of the coaches, or certainly not Aaron Glenn, didn't know this, or the coach, I think it was the Jets, and the referees didn't know it. And where's your precious replay assist to go, whoa, 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 that's a do-over, actually. Florio had this note on Football Night in America. The other one came in the Vikings-Browns game in London, where it appears a kick for a field goal ricocheted off of a wire. Although, I don't know if we know for sure about this. There were several replays in which people on Twitter said, look at this. It deflected clearly because it went a weird direction once it was in the air. But if the league can't get this right, well, maybe I'll join my buddies in their Sunday boycott of the Shield. Cut 9, too depressed to podcast. This week, a Panthers podcast by the name of Meow Mix. That's right. Catchy name. Cute, right? Meow Mix. That had been podcasting about their beloved Carolina Panthers and the travails, the ups and downs, mostly downs, of the team, especially since billionaire asshole David Tepper took over. They've been podcasting about the team for several years. I don't know how big they were per se, but they put out a statement saying, you know what? We're shutting down the podcast. We can no longer justify spending this much time away from our families and this much time talking about a team that clearly has no hope for the future. Well, they were gifted a game by the Cardinals today, so there's that. But it's funny, the tweets and the comments on this saying, do you know how ass you have to be to make a grown man put down his podcast equipment? People used to tell me when, or ask me or say, when the Redskins were in the absolute salad days of their dysfunction, the horrible procession of coaches that did not work out, from Spurrier to Marty, or Marty to Spurrier to Gibbs the second time around to Zorn, and on down the list. And Shanahan, people would say, yeah, you know what? I know you wish the Redskins were good because you're in radio in D.C., and I'm sure when the team is good, the ratings are easy to come by when it comes to sports radio, and they're right, by the way. But they say, I bet as long as they're really bad, that's also good because people want to call in and go, can you fucking believe this quarterback? Or why are they doing this? And my response was a little bit of misery. A short, brief stint of wild dysfunction is fine. You'll get the diehards who love the team calling in and listening and talking about, here's what we need to do to fix it. But extended periods of that is no good. And that's what they're facing in Carolina. They don't even have the heart to podcast anymore. And finally, cut 10, chugging the magic brew. I had a great experience on Saturday. Went to my second ever Major League Baseball playoff game in person. I know. It's hard to believe, right? But the years the Nats were good and they were making the run to the World Series, I only went to one World Series game. Shout out Glenn Yunis for giving me a World Series ticket on him, which was glorious. Of course, home team lost that game against the Astros because the home team lost all 7 games in that series. Worst World Series to watch ever. The home team and the home fans never got to say, yay, we win, which is the excitement of playoff baseball. But I got to experience it because I put my hooks into some sweet tickets at a little restaurant in left field at American Family Field called the Barrel Yard, the Jay Leinenkugel's Barrel Yard tickets. And we had a table for 6 that was literally touching the railing of the decking above the left field wall. And so we're really close to at least the action in left field. And no nets in front of us, and $50 of food and beverage included in the ticket. That was $165, which I thought was a reasonable price for a playoff game. $165 with $50 of food and drink included. And to have a table right there where me and the boys could sit and watch the game and have a grand time, which we did. And it didn't hurt that after the Brewers gave up a solo shot in the first inning, which really took a lot of the wind out of the crowd, that they responded with a bat around second inning in which they were hitting double, 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 and just grinding out at bats, scoring runs left and right. Your final score from AmFam was 9-3. It was a great time. Game 2 is Monday night. For some reason, they took Sunday off. The way baseball staggering it is, they had 4 games on Saturday, then just the AL Sunday, the NL gets Monday, the AL gets Tuesday for 2, and then Wednesday there is going to be 4 games again. So it'll be an all-day affair with all 4 games, all 4 series going on Wednesday. But as I'm sitting there watching the baseball and watching the fans and everything else, I'm just thinking to myself, you know, this is a sport that has been declared dead, baseball, countless times in my lifetime, as tastes have evolved, as the NFL has grown in prominence and power and reach and scope and obsession and gambling and fantasy. Baseball has been said, oh, well, and it's just the, you know, the biggest markets, the most expensive teams, they're the only ones that win. And the kids don't like baseball. It's too slow. It's too boring. Takes too much discipline. You'd be surprised. The kids out there still like baseball. Now, it's generally speaking more suburban kids, white kids, non-African-American kids, but still, it is a game that is endured. And also, just watching players closer up in person, seeing the way they move, how big they are. I mean, we think of baseball. I think it's easy to tend to think of baseball. Well, it's not a violent sport like football. So therefore baseball players, yeah, they're athletic and they're fairly tough, but they're still baseball players. No, these guys are friggin' athletes. These are men that play this game. And as I'm just watching the game and the crowd is so into it and they stayed till the end. I stayed till the end because it was a Saturday. We had nothing else to do. We paid for it in the parking lot because we did not move for nearly an hour. Tomorrow when I talked to Andy Pollin, I saw a tweet from him. He went to the Maryland game, football game, and sat in a parking garage for 40 minutes without moving. He was not happy about that. But still, as I'm watching the game and I'm thinking, this game, minus the pitch clock, minus a bunch of other things, designated hitter, interleague play, wild cards, you name it, changes. But for the most part, baseball, 90 feet between bases, 60 feet, 6 inches from the rubber to the mound, has been played forever. And it's still a wild ride and a great game to watch and a great sport to be into. And when you have a team that is your team and you follow them all year long and you get to know the players and you really get into the personalities and everything else, you feel invested in a way that is unlike football. You feel like you're part of this family when you are rooting for a specific team. And so to be there at AmFam, which is a gorgeous ballpark, and they had the roof half closed. The half that was closed was over the Brewers dugout, shading them from the unusually warm late summer rays in Wisconsin, 88 degrees for a high on Saturday, and left the Cubs bleaching in the sun briefly in warmups before the shadows then covered their side of the field as well. Some Cub fan idiots and some Cub idiot media members are like, oh, look at Brewer gamesmanship. Well, the roof and the way it's positioned is decided by Major League Baseball, not by the home team in the postseason. In the postseason, Major League Baseball has the call, and they're the ones that said close it halfway just to ensure there would be no shadows at the peak of the sun for the batter and the pitcher for both teams. And so that's what that did. But anyway, beautiful ballpark, packed to the gills. For the first time in a long time, Brewer fans stood firm and did not sell off their tickets to Cub fans who have an easy drive up from Chicago and also are all over Southeast Wisconsin just because they're from Illinois or they work there or whatever. And it was a great home crowd, and it was a great time, and the home team won. And I just sat there and I soaked it all in and I thought, fucking baseball. You can say whatever you want. There may be a lockout coming in baseball in a year, but it still is good. And the Yankees currently getting their lips ripped off in Toronto. They lost today 13-7 after losing 10-1. Vlad Guerrero Jr. with a grand slam today that lifted, I would say, the roof off of Sky Dome. But guess what? The roof was already open on a beautiful day, but it was so loud in there. As a fan just watching October in baseball, I love it when the Blue Jays are cooking because it's an electric atmosphere. So Yankees are in big trouble. Dodgers beat the Phillies as well in game one. And there was a moment in which Shohei Ohtani, who hit 53 home runs when he was not pitching, pitched to Kyle Schwarber, who had 56 home runs. And somebody tweeted, the notion that a 53 home run guy just struck out a 56 home run guy makes my brain hurt. Well said on that. Okay, 53 uninterrupted minutes from your boy here. I apologize if I rambled, but I hope I actually went through 10 good points here in my 10 album cuts of shit that's worth talking about on a Monday in the absolute peak of sports watching season, the great month of October. Tomorrow, Andy Polin joins us, and then we'll get back on track with the week. Church, Mr. X, Scott and Solly, maybe a guest or two along the way. We'll see. We'll figure out the week. But I'm going to go watch the rest of this Bills and Patriots game, despite all the bullshit and the rigged officiating and the stupid halftime shows and the incessant commercialization and the needless exporting of our games to other parts of the globe by Roger Goodell and the NFL. I will still curl up on the couch with a cold one and enjoy the rest of this football game tonight. I encourage you to do whatever is in your heart and in your conscience. To boycott or not, to watch or not, to spend money or not, I don't care. I'm just here to show you and tell you what I think is worth talking about. Thank you so much for listening. Do spread the word. Rate and review. My God, you wouldn't believe how important that is to take 1 second to just go, bink, 5 stars. Great podcast. Zabe really is a seasoned vet that gives you the straight skinny on stuff and is not going to give you bullshit. If you just left a comment like that and a rating, get enough of those, I might be able to do something in this podcast biz. I ain't going to be quitters like Meow Mix down there in Charlotte. Oh, you guys can't quit. Oh, no, you can't. Oh, no, no, no. You ain't getting out of here. Get back in there. Start podcasting again. We all know the world is about to run out of podcasts.
That's not true, actually.
The world wouldn't mind another Carolina podcast.
No, we don't need that either.
But don't be quitters. You never know. It could turn around, although with David Tepper, doubt it. Thanks for listening. That's it for me. Have yourself a great Monday, and we will see you next time. You know football, and you pick winners all the time. So why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over a half a million dollars to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.